implementing the Powell memo. Some of the top executives at the largest media companies in the country participated in that endeavor to implement the Powell memo. We unearthed a letter from CBS's president at the time saying not only did he agree with the Powell memo's directives and ideology, but that he was working to correct the situation at CBS News. That's a direct quote. And so I think we have to look at what's gone on in with media consolidation.
We have 30 seconds, David.
With Donald Trump essentially saying media mergers are predicated on his political ideology, we have to look at that as the culmination of the government trying to pressure and successfully pressuring media companies to do its bidding.
We want to thank you so much, David, for being with us. David Sirota, founder and editor-in-chief of The Lever, speaking to us from Denver, Colorado, co-author of Master Plan, The Hidden Plot to Legalize Corruption in America. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Nicole Salazar, Sarah Nasser, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tay Marie, A Studio, John Hamilton, Rabbi Karen, Hani Masood. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
Hi, this is Al McFarlane, host of The Conversation with Al McFarlane. You're listening to 90.3 FM, KFAI, Minneapolis. I'm Al McFarland. Welcome to The Conversation with Al McFarland. Glad to be here and glad to have you along as well. Well, we're moving into the middle of a very hot political season. People are going to the polls here next week, and it's something that we have to pay attention to. I'm pleased to have joining me today as co-host my friend Corey Day. He's with Blue Ox Strategies. He's a mover and shaker in the community and political space, former executive director of the Minnesota DFL party, and always a good person to keep things in focus with. Corey, good afternoon. Welcome to the conversation. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, Al. Very good to be on with you.
Good, good, good. Well, hang out with me for the hour because we've got some exciting people to talk to and talk about. First, we've got our Minneapolis mayor, Jacob Frey. Jacob Frey, good afternoon. Welcome to The Conversation with Al McFarland. How you doing?
Al, Corey, really great to be with you guys. Thanks so much for having me.
Let me say first that I saw you Saturday at the Black Men's Legacy Conference at the Thor Building in North Minneapolis. What a wonderful day, a wonderful opportunity to address the issue of continued and expansive enfranchisement in the political, in the economic and social arena as well. So thank you for what you brought to that meeting. Give a quick summary of what you have to say to Black men on legacy and wealth building.
Yeah. Well, what we saw at the legacy event on Saturday was this incredible group of talent. These were committed entrepreneurs. These were CEOs. These were people who have recently started businesses. These are heads of nonprofits. These were not just leaders in the Black community. These were leaders of our whole city. And I was really proud to be with them. And the message that I had for them is, look, I'm not foolish to think that a comeback can take place without them. A great Minneapolis comeback needs to make sure that we are utilizing every bit of talent that we have on the table. It is making sure that these incredible entrepreneurs have the assets and the ability to set up their own business. We talked about not just setting up that business, but owning the underlying real estate so that when they get the return and gain and equity in money, they can take that money and pass it on to future generations and their kids. And obviously that's been something that's been missing for generations. You know, when you have redlining and restrictive covenants that run with the land, when you have improper financial practices and intentional segregation, you know, you get results where you exclude whole communities, and in this case, the Black community, from the ability to build wealth. So that's what we're talking about here.
Awesome. So you're door knocking and covering the city, trying to take your argument, your case to be reelected to resident voters. What are you hearing in three areas? One, the area of personal safety. How safe do people feel? Number one. Number two, the general concern about homelessness and tie that to home ownership as a broad construct. And finally, what are you feeling and hearing about the safety for immigrant families, people who may be feeling at risk, but I think our city is trying to provide some kind of comfort. What are those? What are you hearing in those three areas?
We're hearing a lot. First, in the area of safety, let's talk about the North Side, Al. The North Side has seen fewer shootings than any time on record. So at least since 2007, and the truth is we didn't keep great records before then, so it's probably a long time before then as well. That has an impact. You know, that is fewer kids that need to grow up around gun violence. That is fewer families that are broken apart. That's dads that are able to come home to their families and help their kids out because they aren't either in jail from or in the grave because of gun violence. This has a big difference on communities. And how do we do it? Well, Al, we worked with you. We worked with moms and grandmoms. We worked with community members. We built out partnerships between communities and the police officers that are charged with protecting and serving them. We embedded a police, we embedded police officers in our U.S. Attorney's office and Andy Luger's office. And yeah, we arrested perpetrators of really violent crime. And the impact? Communities got safer. And I think that a lot of that great community-based work that you all have succeeded on so much, that can be replicated in other parts of the city as well. And so, you know, we're seeing safety improve. And at the same time, I'll tell you the other truth is people don't always feel it, especially when you get a mass shooting that just took place down at Annunciation. So, you know, that's the first issue. And I'm happy to dig more into any of these because I know you guys, you want to get into the details. The second issue, you say you talk about homelessness and housing. Well, that's right. I will put the housing work that Minneapolis has done up against any other city in the entire country. We're producing 8.5 times the amount of deeply affordable homes since before I took office. We've managed to keep rent down more than almost any city in the whole country. And yeah, we still do have homelessness and specifically unsheltered homelessness. But let me tell you what we do with that. With unsheltered homelessness, we go out to these encampments. We offer shelter, sometimes housing. We offer culturally sensitive treatment and care. We even bring a mobile medical unit, such as like a bus that gives health care right on site out to the encampment. And then, yeah, when services have been offered and not accepted, yeah, we close the homeless encampment. Why? Because it's not safe. It's not safe for the people in the encampment. It's not safe for the surrounding neighborhoods. That's a big difference between me and my opponent. My opponent's Senator Omar Fateh is saying that he will never close a homeless encampment, even after a mass shooting. And people are very clear. That just doesn't make sense. That's what we're hearing around the city. Final issue you brought up was immigration.
Yep.
And pushing back on this really hateful policy that the Trump administration has. Just to be clear, we stand with undocumented immigrants. We stand with the families of immigrants who have contributed so greatly to our city. In Minneapolis, they're not just undocumented people. They're our neighbors. They're our friends. We love them, and we're going to stand by them. Our police will not cooperate with any federal agency on immigration enforcement work. We will not, for two reasons. One, it's immoral. I think we need to be standing with the communities that have shown us so much support. But the second reason is I don't want our police officers spending time doing that. I want our police officers spending all their time stopping murderers and preventing carjackings and preventing violent crime and arresting perpetrators of violent crime. I don't want them spending a single minute hunting down the father who just dropped his kid off at daycare, who's about to go work a 12-hour shift, who happens to be from Ecuador. That man benefits Minneapolis, and we got to stand with him. So that was a mouthful, guys, but I wanted to get it all in there.
Corey, jump in with a question or comment before Before you do, on the chat, we got a viewer who's a regular. I think he's out of Texas, the Big Cheese. Two comments here, and you can respond or not. One of them says, PSA to Mayor Fry and all the Democratic Party, the FBA, meaning Foundational Black American Family, demands tangibles and a Black anti-hate crime bill in return for our vote, or the couch will be the new normal. So I'm hearing that some people are advising African-Americans to sit out the challenges to, you know, that are coming from the Trump administration, his policy. And how do you keep everybody involved? How do you discourage or dissuade any segment from sitting out, sitting on the couch? Well, I think it's important that everybody show up and everybody vote. What do you think?
To the cheese down in Texas, I don't know that I can earn your vote, nor even if I want to, because, you know, you can't vote in Minnesota. But regardless, I will say, look, first off, I hear you. I hear so many people throughout this country that have had frustrations on an inability to deliver for people that deserve a leg up. And nobody's asking for a handout. They're just asking for opportunity. So first off, I would say you're right and I get it. But second, no, sitting on the couch is not the answer. You got to get up. You got to get out and vote. Otherwise, we're not going to see any progress here. You won't be able to express yourself. The Black community, I believe, benefits more when more people vote. My campaign, and this is the biased part, but my campaign benefits when more Northsiders and Black people vote. And we've developed out a partnership and a coalition. We've done real work in communities that have quite simply benefited people, and we want to keep that work going.
Corey, what were you going to say?
Yeah, I mean, to cheese, to I mean, I think here in Minnesota, one of the key reasons that I want to say FBAs, we have lost representation and seats that we should be holding is because we sat out.
Right.
Sitting out and not participating has put us on the bench when it comes to being elected and having some representation when it comes to, for us here in St. Paul or in city halls around the state. So yeah, I think it's the last thing we do is sit out and sit on the bench, because when we do that, then obviously we're not in the game. What I wanted to say to the mayor, and very good to see you, Mayor. Always very good to see you. When it comes to the bringing downtown back, now obviously public safety always is the number one issue, but what do you see as some of the keys to how we're going to get downtown back up and running like it was pre-COVID?
Great question. It's not going to be the cities that cling white-knuckled to what once was that see success in their downtowns. It'll be those that embrace change. What I would point to is some of the success that we have had over in North Loop. Now, I was the council member of North Loop before it is the North Loop that it is today. And when I took office, I said, I want everything all in one neighborhood. I want residential, I want commercial, I want bars, restaurants, light industrial, everything, all in one neighborhood. And what you end up with is a dynamic where you have this constant inflow and outflow of people through the space. There's action. There's good people watching. People want to be there, so much so that, you know, I can go to work out in North Loop at 5 a.m. on a Friday. And there's somebody going for a jog. There's somebody else pushing a baby stroller. My father-in-law is coming back from having just worked the night shift for the Star Tribune delivering newspapers. And you got that inflow and outflow of people through the space, and it works. Now, I'll tell you what wasn't built out like that, the core downtown. The core downtown was made so that you go into work at 8 a.m. and you leave at 5:30 p.m. At most, maybe you get a drink afterwards, but that's like it, you know? We need to create a diversity of use, and then we also need to break up the space. You know, there's this old model which, yeah, had a lot of success, and there's a lot of nostalgia attached to it with, you know, Dayton's and Macy's and the Barnes & Noble that was there and the Sports Authority. But, you know, let's be real. If any of us are going to buy a baseball glove these days, we're going to do it online. And so to create a shopping experience, you got to have an experience. You go and have dinner, you have a drink, you go to a ball game, you go out to the theater, you buy a coat, whatever it is, all in one place. That's what makes a city exciting. That's what makes a downtown vibrant. We shouldn't be afraid to lean into it. So there's a ton of things that we need to shift. The other big piece, just briefly, is converting, you know, converting some of this commercial space and office space to residential. Because we're not going to get back to 100% occupancy. So we got to plan on all this. We're working on it, and we're going to get the job done.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Corey. Mayor, thank you. Good luck in your campaign. And, you know, we'll see how things go this week, okay?
Well, I'll tell you, we're cautiously optimistic. But let me just do one more ask here. Get out the vote. Northside, get out the vote. We need every single person voting because this is where your voice is expressed. This is how we make our city better.
There we go. Thank you, Mayor Jacob.
Thank you.
We'll see you next time, Mayor.
Thank you, guys.
So, yeah, thanks a lot. That was a great visit with him. Our friend from Texas added a couple of more thoughts here, and you and I can chop this up a little bit and engage. But he also said that the FBA family overwhelmingly supports Trump's immigration policies. I'm not so sure of that. What are you hearing about whether Black people support Trump's immigration policies?
I mean, we're not monolithic. I'm sure there are plenty of Black folks who do support his policies and those who don't. I mean, we're not, I think as a community, I don't think we all, you know, always row the boat in the same direction. And I think that's probably correct. I'm sure there's, you know, I thought we learned a really interesting lesson when those border governors sent folks up to New York and to Chicago and to some of these northern cities who hadn't really dealt with the border crisis in their face as much as obviously those southern cities had. And we kind of saw how that kind of played out. I mean, I think, you know, for the most part, I think we're very sympathetic to our brown brothers who are crossing the border from different South American countries. I think as a whole we are, but we're a large community of ideas and thoughts. And I'm sure there's certain segments of our population that are very supportive of having a closed border that we have right now. And I really hope none of our brothers and sisters are supportive of these ICE policies and the way that they're treating Americans throughout this country. But I do understand that, you know, we're going to have folks who are somewhat supportive of what the president is doing at the border. And we obviously saw that because we saw kind of the fact that he actually was able to dent kind of the armor when it came to getting Black votes in the last election.
Well, you know, I guess I like to focus on the ICE activity. And I think that ICE is revealing a planful approach to, in my view, intimidating the citizenry at large under the guise of going after the so-called illegal aliens. And I, in my context, am hearing more concern that all of this is a play towards the re-subjugation of Black people and brown people and towards the more permanent positioning of white supremacy as the now revealed policy of the nation, the Christian right in particular. So I think that there may have been discussions earlier about, you know, the fact that the immigrant populations, Latinos in particular, didn't support our candidate. But that aside, I think there's still a concern about fairness, equity, and the improper use of government addressing immigration as the point of a strategy to really create more authoritarian rule broadly in the country. What do you think?
Well, I think next time in the future, when he tells you what he's going to do, maybe we should listen, because he told us what he was going to do. And, you know, I think, and it's the funny thing, as I listen to some of the commentators talk about Trump, and when I listen to the Republicans talk about Trump, they say, well, he's not lying about it. He's being transparent. So, you know, it can't be bad, because he's not, you know, like they said, he's going into the store and he's stealing candy, but he's telling you he's stealing candy. So it's okay. I think right now, I think you're 100% right. I think from the 2025 plan that we knew that was being written, from what Steve Miller and his administration, how extreme he is, his views have been, the way that they have viewed immigration. And to your point, Al, first they came for them, then they come for us, right? Mm-hmm. So I think all in all, any person of color should be wagging and understanding right now that this administration is on a different, you know, they have their sights very clearly set on what kind of country they want us to be. The places that they've shut down, it comes to folks being able to come over to this country, the places that they feel are the clean countries that are okay. The idea, Jen, you remember a few months back when President Trump brought the white South Africans over?
Yeah.
Is there being persecuted in South Africa? Yeah. I mean, some of these things, and I tell you what really gets me, and I think it's going to be one of those deals some years from now when we look back on this, and we're not going to believe we allowed this to happen. The things and the hypocrisy of it, and if you think about it too much, your head might explode. Mm-hmm. But if you ever just put yourself in that position, and you don't want to do it because it's just a waste of time, but what if Obama did this? You know, what if Obama took a plane from Nigeria? What if Obama's, you know, what if Biden's son was in crypto? All the things that you can just imagine, the what if, and I hate to live in that space, but the Republican Party would be, there'll be impeachment papers have been drawn up. The ink wouldn't even have been dried before that plane came over to the United States. It behooves me that we haven't figured out a way to combat this, that as a nation that we haven't really figured out, like, this, some norms are good. And these norms right now, that what he's doing, knocking down the East Wing of the White House, and the fact that he's tripled his wealth with Bitcoin, which is something that, you know, half of America doesn't even understand at this point. It's crazy to me that, you know, for President Obama, his biggest controversy was wearing a tan suit. And we've allowed what we've allowed, and it hasn't even been a year yet, mm-hmm. of what we've seen blowing up boats in Venezuela. It's just, I can go on and on all the things that we're seeing legally being done by this administration. And as Americans, as Democrats, we haven't figured out, we haven't pushed back yet in any real kind of way. And that just blows my mind.
Let's bring in another candidate who's running for office in South Minneapolis. Soren Stevenson is here. Soren, welcome to the conversation. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, talk about your campaign and the issues you represent. We've invited everyone to join us on these podcasts over the next several days, and you were available today. So thank you so much for jumping in here. What is driving your campaign, your work, your vision for service in Ward 8 in South Minneapolis?
Yeah, great question. So there's three major things. The first is a place for everyone to live. We've seen in the last decade in this city that the response to homelessness is not getting it done. The job is not getting it done. We've seen rents rise. We've seen the price of buying a home in this city continue to be prohibitively expensive. At the same time that property taxes are pushing seniors on a fixed income out of their homes. So a place for everyone and making this city an affordable place for everyone to live is my first priority. Next being dealing with the climate crisis. The city has a lot of power over this, actually. Transportation, the emissions in our buildings, energy efficiency for low-income homeowners and renters. Those are super important things, as well as comprehensive public safety. I am someone who was shot by a Minneapolis police officer with a rubber bullet. I lost my left eye and most of my sense of smell. And at the same time, I've also been the victim of crime, and loved ones have been victims of crimes. And so we need to be safe in this city, everyone in every neighborhood. I think you should be safe to walk your dog at night, and everyone should feel safe talking to a Minneapolis police officer or public safety officers from the city. So those are probably the three biggest things that are on my mind.
Talk about you mentioned that you losing your sight partially from an encounter with the police department. Tell me that story.
So this was after the murder of George Floyd. It was a few days, 5-6 days later. I was at a peaceful protest during the day. This was the day that the truck went over I-35. I was not there at that time, but I showed up a little bit later and was standing on the on-ramp to university. And without warning, truly without warning, we were chanting, justice for George Floyd, say his name, George Floyd, these sorts of things. And then without warning, they started shooting. And an officer targeted me and hit me in the face. I was rushed to the hospital, and my medical drama went from there. Yeah. So that's a bit about that story. But what that says to me is we have work to do in this city. We have work to do in this city to make sure that there's not brutality happening to anyone. I go all over my ward. I talk to young people. I talk to old people. I just talked to a pastor the other day who said, I've lived here for many, many, many years, and an officer was beating me over and over again, kept knocking me down, and I kept getting back up. And it did not stop until a white woman came out of her house and said, stop beating that man. And this is a lot of the trauma that a lot of our community is dealing with. And so, we have both a history and a present of brutality that is entirely unacceptable and doesn't have to be the norm. So I want to be a part of seeing that change.
Corey, any questions or comments?
Yeah, Soren, thank you so much for joining us. So a question I wanted to ask was, when it comes to George Floyd Square, what vision do you have for that site? I know there's competing thoughts, and just wanted to kind of hear what your thought was when it comes to developing that site.
Yeah, that's a great question. First things first is I have talked to hundreds, thousands of people in the area, the surrounding neighborhoods. Ward 8 has Central, Bryant, and Bancroft in it, which are three of the four neighborhoods. There is no consensus. Nobody agrees. So it's going to take leadership. It's going to take people who are willing to say, we're going to do this. We've taken in a lot of different thoughts, and we're going to move forward. What I'm hearing, what little consensus I can find, is that it's time for something new, something to grow, something to be done. So we have plans for what to do in the People's Way, the Speedway site. I think the city needs to move forward with that as soon as possible. Build that up, activate that site. There's other things that the city needs to do, facade grants, making sure that the businesses and the homes in the area are looking their brightest and attracting people in and making sure that those Black businesses can thrive. And thirdly, I'd like to see the project move forward. I'd like to see the buses on Chicago. And I'd like to see us put investment into this community. And the best way to do that is through the 38 Thrive Plan. This was come up by many people in the area, Council Member Jenkins, as well as Commissioner Angela Connolly were vital parts of this. And the plan has sat there. Some of it's been completed, but most of it not. And so I'm going to be a champion for that plan to make sure that the 38th corridor in its entirety, George Floyd Square being a part of it, is implemented and the whole neighborhoods can thrive.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Soren. Listen, thank you for taking time to hang out with us for a few minutes today. To our listeners here on KFAI, we're going to be streaming conversations with other candidates at this time the rest of the week online on our social media platforms. So we are pleased to be a platform to help people get information about critical questions and our political opportunities. Soren, final word, something that excites you about the future that you want to help build?
Yeah, that's I love that question. That we live in such an incredible place. Our parks, our communities, our culture is so incredible. I think our best days are ahead of us. I think we have a lot to look forward to. In this next council, we're going to be talking about the 2050 comprehensive plan. And I'm going to be looking for a vibrant city, one where you can afford to live in the neighborhood you want to live in, your children can afford to rent and buy in your neighborhood, and that there's going to be businesses. There's going to be businesses.
Okay, I think we lost the signal here. Lost you for a second. Go ahead.
Okay. Basically, I'm talking about vibrancy. We have the chance coming up to have a really vibrant community. That's something that really excites me. We have challenges to get over. I worked as a homeless outreach worker, talking directly to people sleeping outside about what do we got to do to get them off the streets. I've seen ways in which the city needs to change its course in order to be a better partner getting people off the streets. But as we work on our challenges, we also have so much positive in the future. So I'm really excited.
Let me ask you to go a little bit further with that. What can the city do, a city do, to work with people who are not housed to address the homelessness situation, the encampments, and just the trauma that people are experiencing in their daily lives? Absolutely. What can we do? Is it possible to solve the problem? That's the question.
Well, we'll find out. What I can tell you now is that the last decade has not made progress on it. The leadership that we've had so far has not done the job that needed to happen. There's some things that I want to see done. Duluth has worked on some of this, as well as some other cities. For the last decade, we've said homeless people cannot be downtown, parks, MnDOT land, and we'd prefer if you weren't in business areas during business hours. And so what that means is that people have set up encampments in neighborhoods, and that's totally unacceptable. It's totally crazy to have encampments, in someone's backyard or in a vacant lot. But what we need to do is we need to identify a place. Here's a place, not in a neighborhood, where you can go. There's going to be like yurts or a tents. There's going to be security. There's going to be trash. There's going to be bathrooms. And then social workers can come and know where these folks are, work with them directly to get them up off the streets, as well as having a safe place for them and a safe place for everybody. That's
one more shot. One of our online viewers, Big Cheese out of Texas, says, and I posted it, it's online here, Soren didn't mention anything about bringing back jobs to the Twin Cities. I know you got something to say about jobs.
Of course. Yeah, I mean, part of a vibrant city, Cheese, is having small businesses, which are the major employer across the country. As when we're making room for small businesses to come in, we're making more jobs. I'm endorsed by a bunch of different labor groups because they know that I'm going to be looking out for working people and looking out for their jobs, looking out for their wages, making sure that when people go to work, they're respected at work. We can have both high standard of living and a thriving city with growing jobs. So absolutely, we're working on that.
Soren, thank you so much. Good luck.
Thank you.
Okay. On the trail. Al McFarland, this is The Conversation with Al McFarland. And my co-host today, Corey Day. Corey is with Blue Ox Strategies. And we're sitting here chopping it up on, the politics at hand right now. What's going to happen? I want to pivot, though, to bring another guest in. It's related. It's not directly political. But my friend, our friend, Brian Parker is here. And Brian, there you go. How you doing, man?
I'm good, brother. How are you guys?
Doing good. Brian.
We're good. You've got an event coming up. Let's put it on the screen. I wanted to have you come and talk about your November 20th, 2025 event called House Party, a real talk, real tools, real ownership. So what's going on? What is this event?
Well, this event is it's not like your traditional home buyer seminar where we're going to bore you with the process of buying. This is a presentation of all of the resources available out there to help people buy, dispelling a lot of the myths regarding what's required of you to buy. Some of the myths are you need an exorbitant amount of money down to purchase. You got to have excellent credit, all these kinds of things. Well, what I'm doing is having a presentation of a bunch of people. We're all doing this together. It's not just my event. I have Habitat for Humanity involved, George Gershon with GMC GMC Home Loans, Rondo Community Land Trust, Pat Black with Cross Country Mortgage. We have Minnesota Housing there, PPL. And we also have KP Empowerment, and they are a credit restoration group, an organization that helps with building credit, helping you correct things, touching what's necessary and not what isn't. It could put you in bad shape. So we're going to introduce all of these opportunities at this house party. It gives you the real tools for home ownership, and it's real conversation about what's available out there. There's tons of money available, and with the conversations you've been having with others today on the political front regarding housing, this is going to help people get in the door. There's not a reason for anyone to not be able to buy if they show up to this thing. We're going to put together a personalized, customized plan for each individual that shows up. We're working together with the people to show up to get this done. So please understand we're doing this in a way that's it's going to be fun. You can bring your kids. There's going to be food. There's going to be entertainment. And there's going to be breakout sessions. So everyone will get up and introduce themselves, of the folks I mentioned, giving a five-minute spiel of what they have to offer, what their organization is about, and then a Q&A, and then after that, a breakout to all of the booths, and people can set the appointments to get on the road to their plan.
Awesome. Corey, jump in here if you would. Housing is a political issue, home ownership. The wealth gap is a political issue. You and I, Brian, were this Saturday at the event that Mayor Fry spoke at, and that is the Black Men's Legacy Summit number 4 over at the Thor Building on Plymouth and Penn, an organization or an event put on by Build Wealth Minnesota. And Build Wealth's mantra right now is 9,000 equities. Their announced goal is to help 9,000 people become homeowners on a strategy of reducing the home ownership and wealth gap between Black and white residents. They did report that when they started this initiative some 7-8 years ago, Black home ownership was like around 20%, 21%, but now it's 34%. So in that period of time, with their and other efforts, probably the kinds of things you're doing, we're seeing incremental movement towards expanding the access to home ownership and to wealth building. But Corey, how big an issue is economic disparity and home ownership as one of the baseline ways of identifying wealth in a community? How big is that for the state generally? And what has been the Democratic Party's general approach to addressing the need for home ownership and wealth creation? What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think as we look at this issue right now, and it's something I'd love to hear Brian's opinion on, is I think one of the discussions you're seeing that's going on with the Democratic Party is, you know, when it comes to affordable housing, when it comes to housing, is it a lack of inventory? Is it right now, you know, is it regulation? What is it right now? And I'm curious, especially in the Minneapolis market, I know they're probably going to bring interest rates down again. It looks like that's going to be coming forth. When you look at our market, the Twin Cities market, is it a lack of inventory we have in this market? We're not building enough, too much regulation when it comes to building. Or is it just when it comes to just credit-worthy homeowners? What mix is it right now that you feel that is the real issue within the Twin Cities market when it comes to ownership?
Well, it's a combination of all of those things. And interest rates actually have dropped a little bit. And I give you a little idea of the 30-year conventional fix right now is 6.1, FHA is 6.1. The 15-year is 5.3, and VA is 5.7. So they've come down slightly. And the news usually will report any bump upwards to make it just seem like it's continuing to rise. But it's actually, you know, stabilizing. Now, when it comes to the inventory, the lack of inventory is a double-edged sword. It's kind of good for the fact that it helps homeowners sustain value, the supply and demand rule, right? Mm-hmm. It's not that much of a hurdle. It's just the fact that there are only so many homes out there, but there are a lot of buyers. The building sector when it comes to the regulation. I don't think we need to deregulate any of that because we need these homes built correctly. Mm. I think it's a matter of where can we build. So pushing people out of the inner city into the suburbs is what's happening because that's where more inventory is available, more new construction. In town, like Fry was talking about, and the source in some of the areas that could be repurposed with more housing instead of brick and mortar isn't necessary for some of the office space down there. So I think that stuff will help. But what's really the issue right now, I believe, is consumer confidence. Folks are not sure if they're going to have a job tomorrow. So that's what's been a big deal with holding off as far as sellers. Like they're holding off putting their house on the market because they're not sure, but they know what they're dealing with now. Buyers are out there banging on the doors. I'm telling you, it's like 15 buyers in one house.
Yeah.
But pricing is in Minnesota, especially, it's a lot. It's very conservative. It's comfortable. It's not over the top, but people aren't aware of the resources getting the door. So they feel like it's just over. It's overwhelmingly expensive to get in, and it's not. If you got about $3,500, we could probably get you in a home with some change because some of these programs offer a minimum of $1,000 out of a person's pocket to get in the door. But with inspections and other things, I think $3,500 will get you in the door. So I hope I'm answering your question.
No, I think you absolutely did. And I think that's fantastic because I do think we have to find better ways to motivate and promote home ownership 100%. And the other part that we have to deal with, which is going to be challenging, is that we're a lot of folks feel we're on the cusp of a recession. We saw Target had major layoffs today, the Amazon layoffs. We're seeing that, throughout the sectors right now. So my hope is, folks kind of get in when they need to get in before this economy, which we're all hoping doesn't tank. But I do have fears right now of where things can be headed with, not just what's going on nationally with our president and some of his policies that are going on, but what we're starting to see amongst the workforce when it comes to layoffs that are happening at a pretty good clip at this point.
Well, to speak to that also, I've encouraged people. People are always asking, is this a good time? Is this a good time? It's always a good time. Now is the time. We're always there. I'm glad. And given all of the climate of the workspace and all this, get it while you can. And you're not subject to the unfortunate whims of a landlord deciding, well, rent's going up or I'm going to sell or I need to give you the notice. You have to move. And it's even more difficult now to rent. So, there's the requirements to rent are almost more stringent than qualifying to buy. So if you find yourself waiting and missing out on an equity train on top of that, understand when you're buying a home, the lifestyle of homeownership, you're basically doing a forced savings plan when you're spending into your equity. So when you do make a move or have to make a move or want to make a move, you're taking something with you. And the American dream is to buy a home, have a home paid for at some point. So you want to get your homestead, the stability for your family, and kids learn more when they have a stable home. There's more stability in all aspects of your life. So I'm saying all this to say that now is the time, and with the resources that are available, let's get in the door now. Yes. Some people think houses are overpriced. Well, 10 years from now, you're not going to think so.
Yeah, right. To that point, I'm just curious. I heard, I think I was watching one of these real estate shows or something or another, and they had made the point there saying that if you don't buy now, in 3 years from now, you are going to regret it like there's no tomorrow, because the way this market's going to look throughout the country, from Austin to Minneapolis to Chicago, in 3 years from now, you're going to really kick yourself if you didn't get in the market today. So.
Yep. Yep.
I'm Al McFarland. Brian, invite people to your event again, and we're going to pivot a little bit.
Please come out. We've got an incredible evening set for you guys, November 20th, starting at around 6 p.m. We'll go till 8. We usually stick around a little longer than that. House party, the ownership edition. Again, we've got a ton of resources there, and they overlap with other resources that aren't there. But please come down, get the information. We're not going to bore you with the standard classroom setting of this is the process. No, we're going to give you what you need. There's going to be real tools there, real talk for real ownership. So please come on out November 20th.
Awesome. Okay, thank you. I'm Al McFarland. This is The Conversation with Al McFarland. And I'm going to spend the balance of the program focusing on me and you, Corey. Brian, but you hang around because your voice is always welcome and appreciated here as well. But I wanted to go back and talk more about the political landscape that we were looking at. And it was great to have that conversation with Mayor Fry. But explain to our viewers and listeners the options, the different visions that are on the table. The mayor kind of said where he stands, but his competitors see things radically different. Walk us through who they are and how they differently view moving the city forward.
Yeah, so right now we're in a place where there's kind of emerged as four major candidates in this race, with obviously our incumbent mayor, Mayor Jacob Fry, being one. We have State Senator Omar Fattah. We have Jazz Hampton, who's an attorney, and then we have Dwayne Davis, who's a minister, who's a I can't remember which denomination, but who's a minister. So I think what you have right now is this case where, especially with kind of Jacob Fry and Omar Fattah have emerged as the top two candidates, and there's this very different visions for the city. I think when it comes to the state senator Fattah, he has a, you know, he comes from the Democratic Socialist wing of the party. So when it comes to minimum wage, when it comes to small business, when it comes to some of these things that Jacob believes that you have to have in a city, that kind of these partnerships, Fattah sees it a little differently. He's a part, you know, he's more left-leaning when it comes to kind of these social issues. He's also, when it comes to kind of issues with workers and when it comes to small business or when it comes to business overall, there's very different views. And Jazz Hampton and Dwayne Davis, who are more, I don't want to say moderate, but they're a little bit more in line with Jacob on a few of these issues.
More centrist.
Thank you. They're more centrist on some of these issues, much like Jacob is. But I think the one thing that I, you know, I know Al and I spoke offline on this is that come next week, come Tuesday, between the two major candidates is very two different visions of how you move Minneapolis forward. And it's going to be a very interesting night. You know, it's been a very competitive campaign thus far. And the lines have been just very clear of kind of the pro, I like to call it the pro-Jacob world and the anti-Jacob world. The one thing that these candidates have done for listeners to hear is that we have ranked choice voting here in Minnesota, where you're able to rank 1, 2, and 3, you know, and there's a whole process of how those votes get counted. And the other three candidates have come together as a team to just say anyone but Jacob. So they want you to rank Omar 1 and Dwayne 2 and Jazz 3. So it's going to be a very interesting mix. We haven't really seen that.
I mean, so what fruit can that bear? I mean, how would that work?
Yeah, I think, I mean, it really creates kind of an anyone but Jacob kind of environment. Because, and I said this, if I'm Jazz Hampton, I mean, and I'm talking to a voter, I'm not saying, hey, I'm the best candidate for mayor. I'm the guy who's going to be able to change the city and get it back on track. You're saying to him, hey, don't forget to rank me number 3. Because Omar Fattah, I think, is the best candidate for me, better than me. I just think, you know, I think it's the strangest thing that when you are running for public trust and you have a vision for the city of Minneapolis of what you believe that will make this city move forward, but you're not running to, you know, if I'm putting my name on a ballot, I'm talking to the voter, I'm saying you vote for me, I'm going to be the one who get this done. We're in this strange environment where we have three candidates saying vote for him, vote for him. It's like the Superman meme, where they're all pointing to each other. And, you know, I think it's a little odd. I know for me, it would be tough for me to tell you to go vote for my opponent and if you put me as a third choice. But that's the environment we're in right now. It's crazy season now. It really is. But
that's happening in Fifth Ward as well. I don't know if you follow the Fifth Ward. Yeah. One of the pieces of literature I got listed several candidates saying, vote me second or third.
So that doesn't really exist in many of the other wards, but it does in 5. Mm-hmm. So you have Atropic, you have Miles, and you have Pearl, right? I'm saying, I'm sorry, I know them, so I'll say my other first name.
Yeah, Pearl, yeah.
And So much like we are in this city, we have our kind of divides, right? And you kind of have Topic, who's more kind of further left in her visions. And you have Pearl and Miles, who are a little bit more in line, a little bit more centrist. And, you know, voters, you know, they're telling their voters, if you're not going to vote for me, vote for Miles. And Pearl's voters are saying vice versa. One of the things that I've been created in this city over the last 4 years is we do have very real divisions. There is a, you know, we have a city council that's there right now that is very much kind of a Democratic Socialist Council. We have an entire fraction of folks who are running against them, who are a little bit more centrist in their views. And come Tuesday, 10 o'clock at night, when these votes are counted and we have a better idea, there will definitely be a clear vision of how our city is going to be going in the next 4 years. It's either going to kind of go down this track where we're going to have far more, you know, I want to say liberal leftist policies, or we're going to have a city that has a little bit more centrist policies that have a better relationship with the council and the mayor to try to move us forward. And, you know, the voters have a pretty clear choice come Tuesday, next Tuesday.
How does St. Paul look? Give me a rundown on the St. Paul mayor's.
It's been interesting. So Colleen Herr, who's a state representative in St. Paul, she used to be a staffer for Melvin. She was a policy director for Mayor Carter. She jumped in this race really late. So she didn't have a whole lot of time, but she has a very interesting coalition of business owners, labor leaders, and kind of I like to call it kind of a Summit Avenue, Crete and Durham kind of Catholic St. Paul coalition she's put together against the mayor. And the mayor, you know, I think to Melvin's strengths, you know, the mayor has a very traditional coalition, but you know, a lot of folks feel like he's done a really good job and he deserves another term. And we're going to see how this kind of plays out. It's, you know, it's been a lot quieter than over there than it has been here in Minneapolis. So in Minneapolis, we have a lot more polling and ID numbers, a lot more activity. We don't have that in St. Paul per se. So when we see the results, we're going to see the results. And they don't have as many candidates. So it's not like you're ranking 10 candidates like you have here in Minneapolis on the ballot. So we'll see the results fairly quick in St. Paul. But this will be a real test for the mayor, to be completely honest with you. You know, this is, you know, these are very traditional Democratic coalitions that he's kind of rowing against. So it'll be a real test of his strength. And then moving forward after Tuesday, it's going to be a real test of his leadership to bring these coalitions back together.
Okay. You know, we talked a little bit about the national picture. What is the Trump effect on local politics? And I say that for both you and for Brian. How either comfortable or uncomfortable are potential home buyers with the uncertainty? Like 300,000 Black women lost their jobs in the government. Government's in a shutdown right now, and some say that the Republican strategy is to simply continue to shrink and dismantle, you know, the federal apparatus, so more people losing jobs. And as Corey mentioned, Target, Amazon, Google, all announcing major shrinkages of their workforce. So I say that's all part of not just AI transformation, but it's part of the Trump effect as well. Or is there a Trump effect? Brian, first of all, as you talk to home buyers, is that coming up at all, or are people just oblivious to the national picture?
It is a big concern, as I mentioned before. It's, you know, consumer confidence in a sense. I just spoke with a person today, just lost their job this morning. Severance packages and whatnot give them a little soft landing, but at the same time, their futures are, this is my budget, this is what I've been dealing with. Do I disrupt that? Do I commit to something that, and I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to, because I may not. And then you got folks like, let me get this done before something happens. At least my foot's in the door. So, but there's more of it the other way, more concern than not. So it is an effect. I encourage everybody, get your foot in the door, because at least you got a piece of it before, you know, things happen, but you can still survive it. We're gonna get through this.
Well, you see, I'm posting the note from our friend in Texas who says the average price of home in the Twin Cities is over $300,000. But he goes on to say that his advice to young home buyers is to move to Houston, Texas, where the average price of a new home is $200,000. What is that real? Is that true? And what's the difference?
He's correct. However, the cost of living in Texas is a little cheaper, and people aren't making the same kind of money as they're making here in Minnesota. So, yeah, we are over $300,000 in our average home price. Again, for homeowners, that's a good thing. You're gaining equity. They're sustaining the values of their homes. Moving to Texas to get more house for the money, yes, but you're going to make less money. I know a few people that have lived there. I'm making this, so of course it's cheaper to live there.
Corey, what is the Trump effect on consumer confidence? What do you see broadly for voters? And then how does that impact what we have to do not only next Tuesday, but 2026 as well?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think we're seeing now you're starting to see effect of the tariffs. I mean, we're starting to see it now. It's starting to happen. We're seeing prices are going up, right? And we're seeing businesses are hurt. And then, you know, once again, this is why the economists see that we're moving towards recession. I mean, that's the Trump effect when it comes to our economy. When it comes to electorally, it will be very interesting to see how it plays out in next Tuesday. Not just here in Minnesota, but we have Virginia and we have New Jersey elections, which are big telltale sign elections for the national climate of where we're at right now. So you're going to really see the real sign of those two elections. I know the DNC's put a lot of money and a lot of energy into that, and so has the Republicans. So that will be a really interesting telltale sign. For Minneapolis, you know, like I said, the telltale sign is when you have the Trump effect, we have ICE on the ground here. Where does our city head? Do we stay with the hand we have on the wheel, or do we have this kind of move towards the left? We're seeing it in New York. And New York was going to be another telltale sign when it comes to that race with the Cuomo race. But also, this is going to be one
else. Would you compare the leader in the New York race, Mondani, to the progressive left socialist wing here or to the centrist here?
I would definitely put him on the socialist left side when it comes to policies, when it comes to a lot of kind of things that are free and not paid for. That's kind of, I would put that towards more to our left side. Now, I would say he is if you've watched him, he's a talented candidate. I mean, he's definitely got whatever it is, he's got it. There's no question about that. But this is also going to be, when you look at our party, which is right now really trying to find its identity, it will be very interesting to see after Tuesday what that identity is. So is the leader of our party AOC and Bernie Sanders? Is the leader of our party more of the centrist, Hakeem Jeffries? Who leads this Democratic Party? And I think on Tuesday, that will be our first kind of telltale sign about how this party is going to look going into midterms next year and how we're going to actually kind of draw ourselves, how we're going to look at ourselves policy-wise, how we're actually going to really compete against this Trump effect come next year. Tuesday's the first steps. Tuesday's when we're going to get the first look under the covers a bit and see what kind of Democratic Party we're going to be.
What's the impact of Gavin Newsom and also Governor Pritzker in Illinois? They both are ascending, I think, with their voices and I think in popularity for their willingness to stand up and go toe-to-toe with Trump and the administration. What do you think?
I think it's good. I think more Democrats need to do it. Now, I will say this. I do believe whoever's going to be on that stage in 28 holding the Democratic nomination, we haven't seen them yet. I do honestly believe it's kind of like the Barack Obama who came out of nowhere with some young senator or some young governor that we don't really know who that person is of yet. It's going to be the one that we'll probably see on that stage. But you know what? Keep up the fight, governors, because we can't just lay down. We can't just lay down. I'm happy about the big march I had a few weeks ago, wish there were a few more Black folks out there. But we can't lay down during this Trump, during his whole reign as king. We got to push back and fight.
And what about Kamala Harris? You see her coming back as a candidate?
Yeah, you don't write a book unless if you want to do something. You don't write a, you know, you know, she ain't writing a book for the dollars, I don't think. I mean, I think she's going to reemerge, and I think she's going to put her toe in the water and see what the temperature is and see where the party's at. But yeah, you know, she's a young, she's young.
But is she the leader of the party now or not?
No, you know what? Right now we are on this big captain's ship, and there's no one over there steering the wheel, and we're going to see who grabs it.
All right. Listen, thanks, guys. I'm Al McFarland. This is The Conversation with Al McFarland. What a good program. Corey Day, Blue Ox, thank you. Brian Parker, Parker House Group, thank you. Join us again next week for The Conversation with Al McFarland. But this week, we'll be doing live streams at our YouTube channel.